I am joined on the phone now by Bill Hansen, Cook County resident who's in his, I believe it's his ninth month of a Peace Corps stint in Uganda. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Ann.
How are you?
I'm very well.
So fun to hear your voice again. Now, the last time we spoke was, I believe, in October, so a lot has happened. You are in Uganda. Can you explain for people exactly where that is and where you are?
Sure. Yeah, I'm actually just starting a few days into my 10th month here, which is really kind of blows me away when I think about it. It's gone fast. But Uganda is in Africa. It's in sub-Saharan Africa on the east side, so eastern kind of central Africa. It's a landlocked country just north of Lake Victoria, which is the second largest lake in the world. And we all know where the first largest lake is. I always point that out to people here, and they're not amused at all. it's about the size of Minnesota, and it's the source of the Nile. That's probably the thing that most people know it for. And it's bordered by Kenya and South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda.
And you are on what side of the country?
I'm in eastern Uganda, and I'm actually in a mountain region, and I live at 5,000 feet, and there's an 8,000-foot mountain that's just outside my door that I look at every day, a beautiful mountain called Mount Wanale, but it's part of the Mount Elgon. If people want to look on Google Maps, look for Mount Elgon, E-L-G-O-N, and that's a national park that I'm just 2 miles away from and has a 14,000-foot peak. It actually snows up there once in a while. It doesn't stick, but it does snow. So I'm right on the equator. I'm just smack on the equator. I'm less than 1 degree from of latitude. And so it's very, it's very warm and tropical here, even at altitude.
Mm-hmm. Now, here I thought it was 9 months and you're in your 10th month already. I can't believe it.
Just barely.
How have your feelings about being there evolved over this time? I know this has been a lifelong dream of yours to be in the Peace Corps. Is it what you thought it would be?
Yeah, it actually pretty much is. Before I left, one of the things Peace Corps says, that they said, well, you'll have a lot of expectations and plans, going in, which I did, of course, thought about it a lot. And they said, none of them will come true. It'll all be blown out of the water. But in my case, I've actually pretty much done everything I thought I was going to do. And it's been very much as I pictured it in my head. So just kind of lucky there, I think. The way it's changed really is, in the first few months I was here, of course, it was all pretty overwhelmingly new and exciting. And I was completely, clueless what was going on around me. And now I have a much deeper appreciation for the culture and the people and the country. I'm still pretty clueless. I've gone from being 98% clueless being about 78% clueless, but that's progress.
Yeah, it's the right direction.
By the time I leave, I'll probably be 38% clueless. But so I'm much more comfortable now. It seemed very sort of bizarre, and because it is quite a different culture, of course, and but now it all seems very normal and home-like to me.
No, that's wonderful to hear. I know that you've been working on a number of projects, and one of them is working with coffee growers there. Can you tell us a little bit about that and about what's happening? Because I know you've been working on getting certain certifications and all that kind of thing for your coffee.
Yeah. So this part of the world, Mount Elgon, is known for its unbelievably good Arabica coffee, and it's among the best coffee in the world. And I'm living right in the midst of coffee farms. There's coffee everywhere. They're small farms. I think the average size is 2 acres. The biggest one that I've seen is 10 acres, which is right across the road from me. But they're just managed by small farmers. Most of the farming is done here by women, the actual farming. So the organization that I actually work for, that Peace Corps hooked me up with, is called Friends of Mothers, Basale Bwe Bamayi, in the local language. And so you got to love an organization that's, called Friends of Mothers.
For sure.
And I literally work with mothers, with women coffee growers, every day. And I knew nothing about coffee except that I liked to drink it before I came. And I've learned a ton. I'm obviously not advising them on how to grow coffee. They know a lot more about that than I do. And there are people in my organization that are true experts on coffee. But I'm helping with certain aspects of it. My organization is actually based in the nearest city, in Mbale, which is about 25 kilometers away. It's about the size of Duluth. I'm out in the village. I'm in a tiny little village called Mufura, and I'm out here by myself. My coworker that I work with most often commutes out 4 days a week and works with me for half a day. So I'm the projects that I'm working on with coffee is I'm organizing a grant to try to buy some better equipment for the farmers here. The Friends of Mothers is a little cooperative, a little coffee cooperative, and we have about 38 members, I think, now, farmers in the cooperative. And so they band together for education and for support of each other and then for selling. We're fair trade certified organic, very high-end specialty coffee. We're actually one level below the most desirable specialty coffee in the world. And so my project is to institute some new equipment that'll allow us to step up and be actually, double A, top of the line, most desired specialty coffee in the world.
Wow. So where is the coffee from this region sold?
Mostly in Europe, up until this point. The coffee business in Uganda has been a little chaotic over the last couple of decades. It's kind of expanded and then contracted and expanded, for political reasons mostly. But it's kind of on the upswing again now and really is being recognized sort of anew as a source of really, really good coffee. And our organization is new. And we just sold our first coffee as a cooperative. Obviously, the mothers individually have been selling it for years, but they, as a group, we sold it to America, to a broker in New York.
Oh.
And the exciting news is that people have asked me, where can we get your coffee? And I've kind of said, well, you can't really. And it doesn't pay to ship it from here. It's just too expensive. So, but there's a company in North Carolina called Insight. INCITE, Insight Coffee Roasters, and they bought some of our coffee. It's a women-owned company that only sells coffee produced by women, only organic fair trade, and they're going to produce they're going to roast and we'll sell on the internet Friends of Mothers Arabica, coffee. And the latest, it'll be available in May, maybe before that, it depends on some things. So that's one really fun project. They found me, they bought the coffee based on its reviews, by experts. And then they kind of looked around online and found the website of the organization and saw that there was a Peace Corps volunteer. So then they went, tracked me down on Facebook, and the owner of the company sent me a text and said, hey, this is kind of a long shot, but do you know any of these growers? And if you do, could you get a picture of one and send it to us? Because their deal is they always put a picture of the face of one of the growers on the bag and on the marketing stuff. They actually have an artist that renders from a photograph. Well, I just spent the last 2 weeks going to every single farm and photographing every single mother. So it's really was a fortuitous connection. I'm good friends with that company now. And we selected one of the mothers who just has a beautiful, beautiful face. She'll be the face of the coffee, and they're paying her for it. And it's very exciting. They don't pay very much, but over here, it'll be a huge windfall for her.
Sure.
So, it's really exciting. And now people, so stay tuned. The next time we talk, I'll let you know. I'll let people know where they can order it. But if they just look online, Insight, I think it's InsightCoffeeCompany.com.
Okay. Oh, that's exciting news, Bill.
There'll probably be other outlets too as time goes on, as it gets out there. And we're shipping another container this month, and we've got an order for another container. These are shipping containers, a giant, it's 18 tons, 18 metric tons, 18 to 20 metric tons of coffee when it goes. So we're shipping two more to the United States, and then we have strong interest for about five more. So we're selling as much coffee as we can grow. It's really gratifying to see. And the mothers are getting good prices. They, in my opinion, in their opinion, probably could get a little better prices, but at least they're not being taken advantage of, and they're getting a fair price for their coffee.
Good for you. And this is exactly the kind of thing you're there for, I assume.
Yeah, it's really fun. So my other big project is the mothers. They're very smart. Many of them, the older ones, never went to school, so they're illiterate, but they're smart. And they recognize that that's not a good idea to have all your eggs in one basket, as it were, and being reliant on coffee. So they're actively diversifying. And the first project they want to do is to start a community poultry operation. So to be both egg producing operation and a chicken for consumption operation here in my village. And we're going to build a building, and then the organization will have a real office for the first time in that building. And right now we meet under a mango tree, and which is charming, but we're going to make the mango tree the symbol of the organization. So we never forget our roots being under the mango tree. And we'll still meet there in good weather. We'll only meet in the office when it's raining. But
and coffee. You're going to have the whole breakfast.
Eggs. Yeah, that's,
yeah. That's fabulous.
that's true. It'll be a community cooperative, so the mothers will actually own stock in it. And, you know, the goal is when I leave, they'll have full management of it, and it'll go on into the future.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Bill Hansen, community leader from Cook County, who is in Uganda with the Peace Corps. He's just starting his 10th month, and we've been catching up with him periodically here on WTIP. Bill, let's change gears a little bit. I heard that the other thing you were doing in your off time is you're playing in a band now.
Well, I'm trying to start a band, which I've done before at home, and it's been a challenge, but it's been fun. But I am taking music lessons, and this is actually a Peace Corps project too, because I'm tasked with economic and community development, and so the idea is to start a band that can actually work for money. Mm-hmm. And then when I leave, they'll continue to work for money. That's the hope. And so I was really lucky to find a teacher. I got some really good help from some of the people that are organized around cultural things in the district here. They pointed me toward a teacher who lives about 3 miles away, who's just a master musician. And he plays it's a weird instrument. It's a one string fiddle. It's called the shilili in our language. But it's commonly known as the African tube fiddle. And you think, oh, one string, you know, how hard could it be? Well, turns out it's pretty hard. but he's a great teacher, and he's been playing since, I think he said he started in 1987. And he's not only a great player, but a great teacher. And he's very excited about starting the band. Here, like everywhere in the world, you know, traditional local music is kind of slowly fading away and being taken over by, you know, worldwide commercial pop music, and which is kind of sad. But there's still this, like everywhere else, people really love their traditional music, and it's still there. It's just kind of fading away. So when I go for my lesson, we actually practice in a little mill, a little sand mill where they produce adhesive for tile, of all things. It's just a small room, but when we start playing, next thing you know, I look up halfway through the first song, and there are like 15 people at the door and at the windows looking in like, what's going on? This is really cool. And so we're trying to especially involve youth. You know, unemployment looms large in the youth here. So we're trying to start a band with youth to try to do a couple things to get them employed. It won't be full-time employment. They pay musicians poorly here, just like they do everywhere. But but at least they'll get them some cash and get them connected, you know, keep them connected to their culture, and try to kind of start this folk, or I mean, it already exists, but to support the folk music scene around here, as it were. The connection I think I can make is that I've already connected with the kind of the tourism community around here, and know some of the major, you know, hotel owners and coffee shop owners and that kind of thing. And so I think I can get us in to play there for some real money playing for tourists. And then we've already played two gigs locally, one for a wedding and once in church, that didn't pay anything other than a meal. But that's pretty typical up in the village here. So it's fun. It's exciting. I'm learning a lot. I can play 14 different songs now.
Wow, on this one stringed instrument.
I'm not going to say I can play them well, but some of them I can play pretty well.
So does it depend on where you hold the string, where you press it down? That's how you make a different note?
Yeah, you don't press the string against anything. It's just the string's kind of out in midair. And so just your finger on the string makes shortens the string and changes the tone. And it's very alien sounding to Western ears, and was very difficult for me at first because it's the scale is the same as what we're used to, but the rhythms are completely different and very irregular and sort of, there's one song I play where it goes 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 1 2 1 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 1 2 and that took some getting used to. It's been really fun, and this my teacher's name is Wamakubo Godfrey, but everybody calls him Jesus. So people ask me who's your teacher, I say, oh, I'm learning from Jesus, and they're like, oh yeah, I know Jesus, because everybody knows him. And he is just a great guy. He's just a great spirit, very cheerful and enthusiastic, and as I say, a great teacher. So yeah, big fun.
Oh, that's terrific. Right up your alley.
It's actually been a great sort of entree into the community wherever I go now. As I walk around, like for 5 miles around my house, when people see me, I stick out like a sore thumb because I'm the only white person basically here. But when they see me, the first thing they say is, hey, Shilili. So everybody knows I'm playing. and they're happy about it. They think that's really great that I'm interested in their culture. So it's been a really nice way to connect with the community.
Well, speaking of culture, little shift here. I understand that one of your friends recently got married and the process was quite different than what usually happens here. Can you tell us about that?
My roommate, I'm living in a temporary housing situation, but obviously it's been temporary for 9 months now. I've been here in the village for 7 months. So I don't know that it's ever going to be anything different. It's very comfortable. I'm not complaining, but I live in a house. I'm supposed to have my own entrance and my own, kind of separate living in there, but it's under construction and probably will be the whole time I'm here. So I live in a house, and the caretaker, it's a vacation home of a wealthy doctor that lives elsewhere. And the caretaker lived across the hall from me. He's a nice guy in his mid-20s named Kenneth Mapabi. And so Kenneth and I obviously have become good friends because, we live together basically. And really nice guy, really sweet guy, very sincere, hardworking guy. And a couple months ago, he started to be really happy, I noticed, and was like wearing clean clothes. And he was going to church like 4 days a week at a different church than his church. And I kind of thought, he's putting on a lot of cologne and going to church really often. And then at Christmas, for Christmas Day, he came to me and said, I hope you'll join us for Christmas dinner. I have a special friend coming with her family. And I thought, okay. I had already had an invitation to go elsewhere for Christmas. When I got back, I said, well, how did it go? And he was really downcast. And he's like, it didn't happen. They didn't come. And then he was really depressed for a few weeks. And I thought, oh, darn, fell through, And then all of a sudden he came to me and said, hey, remember my friend? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, she's coming with her family to have dinner, and I really want you to come. And he said it in a way that seemed, like significant, like not just like, hey, stop by for dinner. It was like, I really, really want you to come. So I talked it over with my coworker, who's my advisor in all things cultural. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's a big deal. You have to go. So we arranged that. I was actually out working in the field that day and wasn't supposed to be back in time, but we came back early so I could go. And went well. It turned out it's this whole formal engagement negotiation. So there were, six members of her family, six members of his family, and then they actually kind of work out a deal, for the marriage or for the engagement. And it's partly ceremonial still, and it comes out of ancient culture where marriages were arranged. Nowadays, people find each other through love, but then they still go through this kind of ceremony. And really here, the engagement part of it is more of a ceremony and more important than the actual wedding. Weddings are pretty small, but engagement parties are huge and elaborate. I went to one a couple of weeks ago, had 800 people,
oh.
And they served dinner to 800 people. I couldn't believe it, very efficiently. But Kenneth's much more modest, and so just sort of a small family dinner. And my role basically was to tell her family what a great guy he was, you know, which was very easy to do because he is a great guy. So I just said, well, he's a really nice man. He's actually fairly old for getting married here. He's 26, I think. And so he's getting a little long in the tooth for marriage, but not out of the question. He's a very sort of reserved, self-contained guy. So he's kind of quiet. So it's hard to get to know him, but once you do get to know him, you couldn't ask for a nicer guy, you know, just total straight arrow, honest as can be, and just, you know, really, really hardworking, really well liked by everybody that knows him. So I just said all that to his parents. Then I actually had to run off to a burial down the street. And so a funeral, they call them burials here. So I went, we had tea, I gave my pitch, I ran to the burial, and then I came back for dinner. And when I got back, everybody was happy and excited and just chatting. And so I clearly, the deal had been done. And I just assumed that, and they were leaving, that I said goodbye when we, you know, dinner broke up, they took off to leave the family, her family. And I just assumed she was going with them and that she would, at a later date, they would get married and she would move up here. But no, she stayed. She's been here ever since. So they are essentially married. And they moved out. Kenneth had been building a little house on his parents' property since I've been here, and it's pretty much done. And so they just, that night, they moved over there. And one of his brothers, younger brothers, moved into his room from here. And so now they're married. And but he was nice enough to say, about a week afterwards, he kind of took me aside and he said, he's really, really happy. And she's super sweet, nice. You know, they're great, match made in heaven, and really happy, both of them. And he took me aside and said, you know, you were a big help to me.
Aww.
And I thought, oh, that's nice. I was able to use my probably not deserved status in the community to help him, you know, over the hump with her family. And he won't disappoint him because he's great. So
that's lovely.
So that was a fun, yeah, it was a really fun, fun little cultural experience. I was sort of stumbling through it, but luckily my coworker, Maha Silama, he's the guy I work with every day. He was coaching me. He's gotten pretty good at giving me little cues just by like nodding his head or, you know, or winking or sort of muttering one word to me. So he can get me through almost any social situation. Yeah, he's very useful. He also is a great guy. I have to mention him because we're like brothers from a different mother.
No.
We're so close. He's 30 years old, and he's a social worker, and he is really good at his job. And just he's the opposite of Kenneth. He's very outgoing, very cheerful, but just as nice as the day is long, and a fantastic social worker. You know, really has a passion for it, and he's working for next to nothing, hoping that this organization will grow, which I think it will, and eventually he can be, you know, paid like the professional he is. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, he farms his mother's farm. It's a pretty big farm. He kind of manages that and does a lot of the work himself. And he's a journeyman electrician, so on weekends he wires houses, and then he's also in graduate school.
Wow.
He doesn't sleep very much. He's married and has a 2-year-old daughter too. So yeah, he's a busy guy, but I'd be lost without him. We really, we're both very happy that we found each other. I really like the other people I work with, and you know, I get along with them fine, but we don't have the chemistry that I have with Maha Silama. We really are two peas in a pod and just enjoy the every minute we're together. So that's been really a fortunate accident for me to land with him.
Yeah, that's great to hear, Bill. Thank you for sharing all these stories. And I'm afraid we are out of time, but for the next time we talk, we have to put on the list bugs.
My biggest Facebook response is what I call the series of giant bugs from Uganda. And I do want to end, before we stop, I want to thank my wife, Cindy, who's very, very patient forbearance of this wild sort of late life crisis that I'm having of being here, I'm deeply appreciative of. And then also, I just want to thank Peace Corps for making this possible. They really, I don't really have much to do with Peace Corps anymore. They kind of set you up in a situation and then you're on your own. But they pay my expenses and take care of my health and are, you know, there if I need them. And just a wonderful organization. And I'm deeply grateful that I have this opportunity.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for talking with us, for your time. It's just a joy to hear everything you're doing. And we'll talk to you again in a couple months.
All right. Sounds good.